Okay, we're back. And please support RBN if you can in any way. Visit our sponsors. And we're really in dire need. It's, you know, at least $300 a day goes into this operation. So you can see where it's very much needed. And Ken, you were starting to get into the astronomical aspects again, right?
Yeah, but I already forgot what I was going to say.
We were talking about statues, if that helps any.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's getting back to the Hebrews, the Israelites, where time and time and time and time again, they would lose sight of the proper worship and adoration of the Most High God, God the Father. And they would end up, you know, making statues or images or these types of things, and then pray to them instead. And
but they'd also run around and do sex orgies, right?
Well, it was all related to the star worship and creation worship. I'll just call it astro worship, whatever. And that's part of the reason why I tried to point out the Maseroth and the astronomy and astrology, the astrology being the story of the stars, God's story, not astrology as in, am I going to win the lotto today? You know, contemporary astrology, which is completely against the first and second commandments, which, by the way, I'm kind of have a new appreciation for the Ten Commandments after our last time. And also listening to you and Dr. Day's message, I'm doing a deep dive on the issue of Hades and hell and all of that. I have lots to say about that, but that's for another time. But this is, again, what I'm talking about. Even as a preterist, You just can never know it all. There's always something else to learn. You can go deeper. You can go higher. There's just so much to it. It's really amazing. And, you know, just when you get to the peak of the mountain and you're, you know, beating your chest going, hey, I made it to the top. And then you look and you see, you know, mountain range after mountain range after mountain range, you know,
right,
that still need to be climbed. So
yeah, well, some say there's
like
500 prophecies that have been fulfilled and that there's 500 more that haven't been. So I don't know, preterism just seems to me like you're closing the door in God's face. I don't know.
Well, but that's exactly what I'm talking about is just because, well, let's say all the prophecies about Christ's death, burial, and resurrection, you know, Isaiah 53 are all fulfilled. Does that mean that there's no benefit to studying Christ's death, burial, and resurrection? I say not. I say
right. And Isaiah 53, I was listening to this Friends of Israel, and it's crazy how they're, he just got an award, the guy's out of Belmar, New Jersey, and they, you know, it's they say they believe in Messianic, believe in Jesus Christ, but yet they're still bolstering all these hideous and heinous, horrendous lies, right? But he made the point that Isaiah 53 is never, ever read in synagogue.
Oh, I know. I used to work with a lot of, air quotes, Jewish people, which, by the way, were all good people to me. I never had any problems with them. And my boss was Jewish, and he was the best boss I ever had. I mean, stop myself before I get off on that tangent, but this one guy, he was in the office next to me, and I flat out asked him one time. I said, well, haven't you ever read Isaiah 53? And he's like, nope. You know, just like...
not allowed.
Like, yeah, not going there. And So it's kind of interesting, you know, especially if you're into the Torah or the Tanakh. How could you not? I have to say this about myself. It's just always something new, whether it's Old Testament or New Testament. And you can never learn it all in an entire lifetime. It's just not possible. So,
like we've talked about before with the giants, right? You just assume it was giant human beings in Genesis 6, right? But it turns out apparently it's all kind of giants and extra gigantor, you know? Oh, and Kat Carson, again, she's in Texas, and she was asking if you're in the Lubbock area. I believe you are, aren't you?
I am.
He is. Okay. Continue.
Yeah, it's an interesting place. It's high and dry, 3,600 feet. Actually, Lubbock Airport, I think, is at 3,200 feet. Preston Smith International Airport, they call it. And it's flat as can be for miles and miles and miles and miles. But I always get a kick out of telling people that, you know, here in Texas that, you know, in flatland, we're above 3,000 feet in elevation. It's quite interesting.
Yeah, that kind of amazes me. Is there somewhere where there's a sudden drop-off or rise to get there, or is it all pretty gradual? No matter which direction.
Oh, yeah. They call it the Cap Rock. It's to the east and southeast of where I'm at, where it's pretty dramatic drop-off, but it's also takes you a while once you get down that little bit to go down the rest. You don't really notice it, except for a couple of areas where, you know, they look like whatever you call them, plateaus when you're out driving in the desert, you know, through Utah, and you see those things sticking up that look like tree stumps.
Mesas, yeah.
Stuff like that.
I remember one out there in New Mexico back in 77, I guess it was, when we were out there. And, you know, you just see, like you say, it's just unfathomable, the distance, you know, the area, the amount of land, and it's just like, boggling, mind-boggling, you know. But so you see this from a distance, it'll look like anything, but if you drive up in it, which there was a road up into it, it was like a whole nother land, you know. There was forest and they were herding sheep in there, and you know, but everything else was kind of desert like
Texas has pretty much got it all. You have eastern Texas with all big pine trees, and you know, southern Texas, you have coastlines and beaches, and West Texas, you know, Big Bend area, you have like a 7,000 foot mountain. The Panhandle, and then the Southern Plains down to, I guess, just south of Lubbock a little ways, is the Southern High Plains. It's interesting country, but it's very much like eastern New Mexico.
It's just so much land. I know here, coming from the east, you can just stay on the ridgetop and come across here, and you don't appreciate that how high this is and how, you know, drastic the change is. So first-time visitors, I always go down, you know, the state highway there a little bit further and come up the other road, so it's almost a vertical climb, you know, so you can appreciate the hill.
Yeah, when you get up to Amarillo, you're in the 4,000 foot area, and then over into eastern New Mexico, it's the same as well. And then like Albuquerque, I don't remember exactly, but it's like 5,000 feet, and then you have Santa Fe where 6 or 7, I think, something like that. I forget. So it's interesting country. Of course, it's a lot prettier up there with, you know, lots of pine trees and stuff like you were just saying. Here, it's, if you don't have water, it's just dry. I mean, when we have big windstorms, you know, I literally watch a half inch or an inch of my land just blow away.
Yeah. No holding the topsoil down, huh?
Yeah, I'm working on getting something grown out there. But when you mow all the weeds down, all you have left is dirt. And to get grass growing out there takes a tremendous amount of water because it gets really hot and dry in the summer. Let's see, right now I'm at 27% humidity. We've been in the 10-12 range for the last couple of days.
Wow.
But it's interesting country. If I could have my choice, I probably would live in areas with mountains and trees and all of that, but I feel blessed to have my place and what I do have. So
yeah, me too. It's, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, a cousin that I had rarely seen, but I guess it was when his an aunt, my father's sister, not his mother, but sister of hers, and like I said, my father's sister passed, and I guess she had me, you know, just as one of the people in the family, and so he was just clarifying what to do with whatever, and I told him do whatever, but you know, he said, isn't that kind of backwards to move out, you know, aren't you supposed to move south as you get older? You know, rather moving out to Wisconsin, right?
Yeah, I imagine you get some pretty nippy days and nights there.
We get
cold here. I've, you know, had single digits this year, and I think a couple times we went below, but not as many times as last year. But, you know, high desert plains. I was going to say, though, grass is always greener, especially, you know, when you live around brown dirt, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah. Well, I'm going to segue back into eclipses.
Yeah.
Kind of said what I want to about our contemporary eclipses going on this month and in April as well. We have lunar eclipses, and then my software calls the solar eclipses, it calls them conjunctions for some reason. I don't know why, but we do have those, that one going on as well on the 8th. But that was all just a segue to go back into long, long ago, 2,000 years ago, about lunar eclipses that were observable in Palestine, or if you're from East Texas, Palestine, because there's a significant amount of theologians who still go with a particular lunar eclipse that happened in 4 BC. I'm using BC because I know you don't do BCE, even though BCE could actually be applicable if Christ wasn't born, you know, in year zero.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy anyway. But you know what I do with that CE, don't you? That stands for Christ Eternal, so they lose anyway.
Well, it's an issue of discussion due to Josephus talking about that the death of Herod came after a lunar eclipse and prior to the spring Passover. And so what they did was they chose, and they still continue to choose, 4 BC or BCE, for those that prefer, for an eclipse that happened on that particular date, which then, of course, means that Christ had to have been born prior to that time, because we know for sure that Herod passed away after Christ was born, because, you know, the whole biblical narrative where Herod tried to have him assassinated, you know, by all the children 2 years or up to 2 years old. And so,
well, I told you before too, growing up, six BC was always the time that was given for his birth. Six BC was just like almost carved in stone until recently.
Yeah, it's still a very much debatable topic, but hopefully less so after examining some of these things. It's really fascinating. There's a period of time from 7 BCE to about 4 AD, Anno Domini. And it's one of the most important times in Roman history. And so it's very bizarre that there's very little information about these things in the written, in the available written records from Rome and other sources as well related to that time period, which...
Well, it would have to include Christ, so they got to cut it out altogether, right?
Well, right. And, you know, getting to the chase, got to look at it from that particular perspective, you know, conspiracy, whatever you want to call it. The truth is that that is the case. For a very important time, one of the most important times in Roman history, you have few records that are available. And so it's just very odd that that would be the case, you know, unless it'd been scrubbed, you know, already historical revisionism, whatever.
Lies of omission are the worst of lies, right?
Yeah, they call it the Dark Decade, 7 BC to 4 AD, which, or, you know, CE, whatever. Try to keep everybody happy. And, you know, I made the mistake. Exactly. That's, I just have to laugh. Because I used to make the mistake of forgetting to subtract a year, because when you go from 1 BCE to AD or AD to BC and you're computing years, you have to subtract one. So from 7 BC to 4 AD is actually 10 years. So the dark decade. And so we know from Josephus that he did die shortly after a lunar eclipse. And prior to a spring Passover. And so if we look at that dark decade,
time's just running away with us here. I guess we got a little break coming up, and we'll be back in a few.
handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hi, Tom Bolton for Ease Off. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation. But today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family.
And we stop defaming me.
You the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats. And even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org.
and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
We're going to hear some more about these eclipses, I think, right, Ken?
Well, that's the plan. But these impromptu speeches, you never know where you're going to end up, especially in the wide expanse between my ears. All right, so basically the question of when Christ was born is based on these comments by Josephus, who mentioned that he was born before Herod died, and before the spring Passover. I'm not saying that correctly. I'm reading and trying to talk at the same time. It's obviously not working too well. The eclipse happened prior to, let's see. Hang on just a second. All right, I got it back again. Anyhow, the timing of the eclipse determines when Christ was born based on the death of Herod and the spring Passover that happened after the death of Herod. All right. And the majority of theologians, even contemporary, place Christ's birth before the spring of 4 BC or BCE due to Josephus' references to King Herod's death. Not long after a lunar eclipse, but before springtime Passover. Whew, finally got that out. And so if we look at that time frame, the dark decade, and we look at lunar eclipses that are observable in Palestine during that time, because there are, many eclipses that could happen during that time, all over the world, but we're talking about that have to be observable from Palestine or the land of Israel at 2,000 years ago. And so there are only 4 eclipses that match those qualifications. And so if we're looking at 7 BC to 4 AD, you look at the year 7 BC, there were 0 eclipses that happened during that year. During 6 BCE, there were 0 eclipses. All right, but then during 5 BC, there were 2 eclipses, one on March 23rd, interestingly enough, and these figures I'm getting from astronomy professionals. I haven't been able to duplicate them in my personal astronomy software because they're 2 days different, but I think that's a problem due to my software. So these figures I'm using are not directly my own, but from other professionals that have come up with these times. I wanted to qualify that. And at first, the eclipse in 5 BC was a total eclipse, centrally viewable. And the elapsed time between the eclipse and Passover was 29 days. And we'll explain the emphasis on that here in a minute. Then the second eclipse that happened in 5 BC was on September 15th, which was a total eclipse, centrally available for viewing. And there were 7 months in between the time of the eclipse and Passover. Let me just continue, 4 BC, you have one eclipse on March 13th, which was at 2:20 in the morning, 0220, was only a partial eclipse, and then there was 29 days in that time frame. 3 BC, no eclipse. 2 BC, no eclipses. And then in 1 BC, there was on January 10th at 0100 hours, 1 o'clock in the morning, there was a total eclipse that was centrally viewable. And there was 12.5 weeks in between the time of the eclipse and Passover. All right, so that time during the eclipse and Passover, you have to allow for a number of different things, which then makes the time frame, 29 days, 7 months, 29 days, or 12 and a half weeks, a critical issue. Because you have Herod, who became very ill. He was already struggling and had some illness, but he became very ill during that time, and then he passed away during that time. And then, you know, they had to have his burial preparation, his funeral procession, and all of these things before the spring Passover. And I've started to paint with a broad brush here, really leaving out a lot of detail, but due to time constraints, I want to get this message through, and then we can go back and dig deeper into it. But if you take the time that he became ill, and then he moved from his palace in Jericho down to an area by the Dead Sea where he was doing mineral salt baths, and then his movement back up, and then his eventual death due to his disease, or illness, I should say, there's a time frame that takes for that, because, you know, they basically walked him along, and, you know, he wasn't in a cart or anything like that. So there's quite a bit of time taken up. So the bottom line is, it would be very difficult in 29 days, highly unlikely, that all of the things could happen, including the ones just mentioned, in that 29-day period of time, because you had to plan the funeral and, you know, allow for the time of his illness and getting worse, and then traveling up and down upper and lower Israel to seek wellness. So that really, and again, broad brush here, takes the 29-day eclipses out of the picture. And cutting to the chase, what it boils down to is that the first option, excuse me, the 1 BCE becomes the only option that allows you to incorporate all of the time constraints of, you know, including Herod's sickness, movements, his death, burial prep, funeral procession, march, would take much longer than 29 days. And so that really makes the 1 BCE eclipse the one that makes the most sense when you incorporate all of these things. Now, there are some other things that happened that were political items that happened because Herod had a couple of, air quotes, rabbis executed because they were responsible for some kids tearing down the eagle that Herod had placed on the Eastern Temple gate. And so, in other words, there are other items that happened that push the date towards the 1 BCE eclipse date that would then change the birth date of Christ to either 3 BC or 2 BC. And I think I brought some of that up the last time we spoke, in that especially like when you look in the book of the Revelation of Jesus Christ, where it talks about the woman with the sun, clothed by the sun with the moon at her feet, that is an actual astronomically observable stellar placement that happened both during 3 BC and 2 BC. It's you can see it in your astronomy software, where the sun is actually you know, in her upper body area and the moon is down by her feet. Virgo, that is, has those two things going on. And it happened in September of 3 BC and also in 2 BC. And so when we take all these things together, we are left with really the only choice of 1 BC. And a lot more to say about that because we're getting short on time. I just wanted to get the whole thought through, and then we can go back and drill down to more detail. So if people have any questions about that, want to call about it, I'll do my best to answer the questions. But, you know, again, due to time constraints, I just wanted to get that complete thought out there.
Yeah. I'm glad you did. And so it makes it even more curious why they would hide that time period if they have it figured out, as you have, and I'm sure they have, right? And it takes some detective work, but then they're hiding it. But you came across it, and you figured it out. So, of course, they know. But it's too accurate. They don't want to have that out there. Go ahead.
It's information that other people have also figured out, you know, I shouldn't even say it that way, that figured out a long time before I did, but I pulled it together with some other things that I've found out that I'm not talking about right now, but it's...
There were also markers in time, right?
Right, and there's political things that happened, there's theological things that happened, there's things that Herod did, other time constraints, and it's just fascinating to me because why would they say that, you know, today's 2024 instead of, you know, 2025? Or if it was 4 BC, then, you know, that's another 3 years, so it'd be 2028. So why all the gamemanship? And, you know, Gregorian calendar, you know, was changed from the Julian calendar, and then they did the Gregorian update to the calendar. And so why all this pussyfooting around with the dates? And my conclusion is they're trying to hide the actual date of his birth. And it also goes back to...
Go ahead.
No, please.
Lose your thought. I'll make you lose your thought. Go ahead.
Well, I think I did. During that period of time, with those things hidden in the Roman history or the revisionism or whatever it is, it creates confusion between the available historical records and the claimants of when he was born, so that you know, it's plausible deniability, saying, well, you know, historical records don't line up with when you say he's born, so therefore we don't even believe he's a real person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of these arguments.
Well, what do you think about the, you know, this Agenda 21, which really means not the 21st year, but the 21st century. So it's, you're dealing with the whole century. And then 2030. And Dr. Day pointed this out, too, that it's like it's very important to them to have 2,000 years after his birth and life and death and resurrection, that they want to be on top of that for some reason.
Well, that's a serious can of worms there.
But if you're not believing that he's coming back, right? Which you're not believing he's coming back, right?
Well, I believe he already has come back, and I believe that, you know, if he's, you know, taken on the full Godhead, you know, he is omnipresent.
Oh yeah,
it's a very tough conversation to have in you know, less than about 5 days.
right.
Because of all of those factors, you know, why did he have to leave in order to send the Spirit? There's just so many aspects mm-hmm. to it. The imminency of, you know, the book of Hebrews, of, you know, the first and third verse of the Revelation, of the issues of, you know, Ezekiel 37:38 fulfilled, you know, where you have the house of Israel reunited with the house of Judah. And then you have that mentioned by Paul in the book of Hebrews. So there are a lot of things that, to me, are insurmountable and require a past fulfillment and not a futuristic thing. However, I think that the whole reason for the dispensational theological persuasion was put in place so that they could accomplish their own self-fulfilling prophecies by jettisoning previously complete prophecies into an unknown future to achieve their political objectives. And that's a whole lot to say, but if you look at the introduction of the Codex Sinaiticus and the whole dispensational movement, and then to what's happened today with, you know, Judeo-Christianity, Christian Zionism, and all of that, it all looks like it's perfectly placed in order to achieve an objective rather than to follow the biblical narrative. You know, that's a whole lot to say, and that's a huge, gigantic broad brush to throw that out there without really being able to support it. But it's to get the big picture across without the time to deal with critical details. And I will say this again, I've said it before, that you have to go with wherever God has you. If God, in your interpretation of the Bible, you think it's future, then you have to act accordingly to how you understand Scripture. I'm not trying to convince anybody that I'm right and they're wrong. Mm-hmm. You have a duty and an obligation to live your life according to how God has, Holy Spirit has convicted your heart, your soul, your mind, your body. And so I'm not trying to say that my way is the right way, you know, or the highway. It's like, if you have an argument against it, then, you know, I'm open to that. And it was like kind of ironic, because just this week I had somebody contact me saying, well, what about this and this? And I'm like, well, I'm kind of busy right now. I'll get back to you on that. But it's the open dialogue to study the Bible. And, mm-hmm. you know, I could be wrong. I used mm-hmm. to think like a dispensationalist mm-hmm. when I was a baby Christian, just mm-hmm. because of what preachers were saying and mm-hmm. was coming from the pulpit. And I didn't know any better. It wasn't mm-hmm. until I started studying eschatology that I started asking questions, and I actually started reading the Bible for myself instead of listening to what somebody else said that it said.
Well, part of your reasoning is calculation of days rather than years, right?
Well, that's a great question, because it's part of the reason why I find the Maseroth studies so incredibly interesting, because astronomy doesn't lie. I mean, there's mm-hmm. there's
yeah, that's something they can't fake, right? That's something they can't fake. They can mess around down here, right, and try to get people to believe certain things and change historical records and make other things appear as if they're historical, but they can't mess with the placement of the planets and the stars.
Yeah, they can, you know, sow all kinds of confusion in so many different ways, but it still averages out that, you know, a month is 29.53 days, and, you know, years are 365.242 days, and there are just some things that you can't fake, you can't fudge, and so you can determine when eclipses were or are going to be, and you can look at all of that to get a better idea of what the actual time frame is. And, you know, again, I don't claim to be any expert on this, and I'm not an expert on the Bible either, but I have to go with what I think the truth is, and I have to live my life accordingly, right. And to not do so is wrong. It's sinful.
Yeah, what he's shown you, and I really appreciate it, and takes courage too. But, you know, they use these things. For instance, Mnuchin was treasurer, and he went to, what was it, 2017, right? August 21st, I think, the eclipse that came across, and it crossed directly over Fort Knox in Kentucky. And he went and grabbed Mitch McConnell and went there. And, you know, rumor had it that they were up on the roof. And he said, oh, no, we weren't doing that. But I think they probably were, you know, because it was very important to be directly under that as it passed.
Yeah, that's what they're doing with this coming eclipse. And, you know, they're talking about how it's making this big X on the United States when you look at both the recent eclipse and this one coming up, and how it's going through certain cities called, you know, Nineveh and Jonah and stuff like that. And
yeah, and the thought just occurred to me too about the big X. Look at everything that's X now.
Well, it's exactly. Kind
of
that's exactly why I brought it up, because there's a whole lot to that, let's just say, and it's everywhere. You know, why would you change Twitter to X? I mean, it seems like a marketing gaffe to me, but I digress.
To do with that long rectangular part in the, you know, every stroke, every keystroke, every pen stroke, you know, every... You know, goes through so many deliberations as to how these spell castings will be used, you know?
Right. And, you know, as Christians, they're the most hated and detested people by the WEFers, because they're the only group of people on the planet that will not make good globalists
mm-hmm.
because they obey a higher authority.
Mm-hmm. True Christians, not Crino, Christian in name only, like this MSNBC reporter recently saying, oh, she's Christian, but she's, you know, Christian nationals, that's something else altogether, that you deny that the government is giving you your rights, not God. God doesn't give you, you know, and what kind of
that's
Christian is
so
that?
Funny, because when you say crino, then all of a sudden I was reminded of a term I heard somebody else say, and that sitting in church in their pew as the chosen frozen chosen, the crinos.
Yeah. And she had, as I was looking into her background a little bit, and one of the, I guess, first things she did was work on a report on Hildebeest campaign. So there wasn't any bad reporting, you know.
When I was very young, one of the things that convinced me that there had to be a God was the fact that there was evil and there were Satanists. And so how could you possibly have that and not have the other half, you know, just like there's, you know, night and day.
And so many people will go right along with this Satanist thing because he says, you know, that was his biggest thing, to make people believe that he didn't exist. Because like you said, if he doesn't exist, well, then you can try to believe that God doesn't either. But it's not the truth, so.
Well, when you have all of the worldly cares taking your attention, you know, especially if, you know, how's that saying go? He dies with the most toys wins or something.
Yeah.
So if you're so busy in your life with your toys, there's no room for time with God. And yeah, I don't say that to condemn anybody. I've been plenty distracted during my years on the earth with worldly concerns. And there's no room like my room for improvement.
Real quickly, was Heidi Prisbyla, Przybyla, but her husband's name is Jeff Traub, Trabb, and he's a cardiologist, apparently. So, you know, that's kind of a high position anymore, to be a really good liar, you know, to be in the media. But that just really annoys me. Christian nationals, well, they don't believe where their rights come from. It's from the, you know, government. You know, and traditionally, and still, they just dropped it off. But we've never had constitutional rights. We've had constitutionally protected, God-given rights. You know, that's what
it's a critical point. It's absolutely critical point.
Even though the Constitution is not what we thought at all either. And, of course, not being perfect either, but the Articles, excuse me, of Confederation gave the states rights. And it also, you know, in the Constitution, Article 6, how they can tax us, right? And the different things they can do. And it narrows down to being the feds can't put a whole state in prison, but they can go after an individual. So that's one reason they needed it. And they also had to do it very quickly because the states were becoming accustomed to shutting out this federal government. It hadn't really been hatched yet, you know? So they had
before I got gaddified, I was already looking at the Constitution differently. Well, also because of good grief, what's his name that did that book on the Constitution? Darn it, brain, come on, this is not the time.
On the Constitution or something?
But starts with an L, ends with, last name starts with an S. He wrote that book on the Constitution, how it's to no effect. Lester has a funny name.
Not Lysander Spooner.
Yeah, Lysander Spooner. Right.
Oh, okay.
So I had heard about that, and then, but before that, I had heard Walter Weiss. He's an SDA guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who was talking about the freedom of religion issue, and how that actually opened the door for non-Christian religions to then get in and do the damage that they've done. Now, that's the oversimplified way of saying it, but again, we're short on time. And speaking of time.
Oh, yeah. All right. You were going to tell us something, right? Remind you what he wants to say near the end of the show.
I've been stressing on it, deciding whether or not to go ahead and say it, but what I've done to use Chris Hinckley's wording, the magic decoder ring,
mm-hmm.
I have, the magic decoder ring is actually the Great Pyramid, been able to determine the exact location of the crucifixion using math.
I know you talked about this before. Yeah. And it's on, was it on the Mount of Olives? No.
On the Mount of Olives.
Yes.
And I have it mathematically down to within 100 feet.
Wow.
And that's using the available tools that I had. If I had, some laser surveying stuff, I might be able to remove that error. But right now, it's on a particular location, 100 feet from the summit of the Mount of Olives, which is interesting if you're familiar with the red heifer sacrifice and where it allegedly was located.
This would have been
the big news.
Visible too, right, to everyone.
Well, I don't do that stuff to believe. I do that stuff because I believe, and then I want to find out more and more about it. But if the pyramid was built 2,000 years before he was born, that says something there. Oh, the world's saved by the music, and they'll finally get me to shut up.
Well, we'll have you back again if you can. I'd sure like it.
It's very interesting
to me. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Mr. Producer.
Yeah, thank you, Sam. And
thank you, RBN.
There's just so much here to uncover, but it's all pinpointed in times and places. And like you were saying, bringing out how this is kind of avoided that one time period so carefully.
Yeah, I wish I could have gotten into more detail, but...
next time.
Hopefully it'll be enough to get people to go search the scriptures for themselves.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mer. Talk to you next time.
Thank you. All righty. Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone. Pasiba, dasvidanya.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.